I spent 5 years hurting a good woman by staying with her, but never fully choosing her. I think to men, that was a very confronting reality that a lot of men were living. You know, a lot of men approach relationship like the fantasy is so much better than the reality. And so we get into the realities of relationship and we feel burdened by it, irritated by it, overwhelmed by it.
This is episode number 601 with Brian Reeves. This is actually a return visit. Brian and I did a podcast episode, like 10 years ago?
Oh, easily a decade. Yeah, it's been a minute.
Yeah, the show is in its 11th season. I started in 2013 and we're in 2024 right now. So yeah, Brian and I have a lot of similar points of view, and I'm interested in talking to him today about how to cultivate a deeper connection with your partner. We're going to be talking about his new book, and we will get to that in just a moment. But before that, I wanted to welcome you back to Last First Date Radio, where we believe it's never too late to go on your last first date. And to support you, I've written two books. The first one is called Becoming a Woman of Value, How to Thrive in Life and Love. And this book is written for women, but it's really for all people who want to go from surviving to thriving and learn the steps that kind of I went through and what I take clients through. And each chapter has exercises like Brian's book. There's lots of exercises in there. And the second book is called Choice Points in Dating. And I wrote this book last year. And the reason I wrote it is because I saw so many people who not only thought they had no choices in certain aspects of dating and relationships, but also they didn't know where to turn. And so this book really is a handbook for dating, from how to think about dating in a better way, more positive, more open-minded way, to how to choose a partner, how to navigate online dating, offline dating, how to know when to stay, when to go. We talk about all of it here. And both our books are available for Kindle and paperback on Amazon. And the Choice Points book is now available on audiobook. And every week I bring a tip from the Woman of Value book. And this week's tip is be more vulnerable. I think this is a topic that we're going to probably discuss today in the podcast, vulnerability. I know that Brian has a whole chapter on how vulnerability was considered a weakness for many men, especially growing up. And vulnerability was considered a weakness by women too. And in fact, when I first heard the word vulnerable, when I was in coaching school and a man said to me, "I really want to be more vulnerable." And I'm like, "Why would you want that?" That sounds really bad.
Wow.
That's how far I've come in this world.
Wow.
But yeah, I had no idea this was a foreign concept to me. Why would you want to open up and be so wide open that people can take advantage of you? And that's how I saw vulnerability. Not true, right, Brian?
Oh, that's for sure. In fact, I approach vulnerability as a superpower.
Yes.
As a superpower. And I want to talk about that more in a moment. But Sandy, first, I just want to congratulate you on yes, you and I, we're like OGs in this space. We've been at this a long time. And, you know, when we just recently reconnected, I was like, wow, Sandy's still doing it. She's crushing it. Good on her. And you've written a couple books. So I just want to first acknowledge you, congratulate you. You know, this to stay in this work for this long and to keep going strong. Congratulations. I just wanted to do that first.
Well, thank you. I'm right back at you. Yeah. You know, writing books is no simple thing, and staying in the coaching space, because so many people do it and then they give up because they really don't know how to make a business of it, or they get bored because they don't really have a point of view. Mm-hmm. And it took me a long time to find my voice and to see what I brought to the world of coaching. Yeah. And, you know, I think both of us bring a unique point of view, and we're going to get into that in just a moment. Before I bring Brian on, I want to also just invite anybody who's not yet a member of my Facebook group to join us. We have 7 monitors who keep this group safe and sane. And I will tell you that there are very few groups out there who are who have clear guidelines, just like I do in my life. I do the same thing in my group. And without clear guidelines, it's a chaotic mess, just like dating can be. And so we want to help you to grow on your journey to love. And it's just such a wonderful space and it's free. So join us at Your Last First Date. And now for my guest, Brian Reeves. He is a former U.S. Air Force captain. He's also the author of two books, and he's a life and relationship coach. He focuses on supporting men to have better lives and relationships. And his blog has been read by over 50 million people across the world. He's the co-founder of the Elevate Your Relationship program for men who are ready to improve their relationships. And he's the co-host of a popular podcast called Men This Way and author of his newest book, Choose Her Every Day or Leave Her. And if you're watching on YouTube, here's what it looks like. It's got a lot of pages in it. Welcome back to the show, Brian.
Thank you. Thank you, Sandy. Glad to be here.
So let's talk a little bit about this book. It started with a viral video, a viral article. And why do you think it hit a chord for people?
So the that viral blog in 2015, titled of the same name, Choose Her Every Day or Leave Her. I think that that hit a nerve for a couple of reasons. Number one, it was written by a man, and a man who was at the time, I was blogging a lot for websites like the Good Men Project, which you were writing for. And I was writing as a man waking up to my responsibility in relationship, to my part in the breakdowns of intimacy and relationship. And I don't think at that time there were very many men doing that. I'm not sure that there are now, but certainly not almost 10 years ago, because my writing at the time was really growing a big audience, because I think that was unique in the world really at that time. A man taking, public ownership of his role in relational dysfunction and owning 100% his part. So I was writing about that, right? And that article speaks to that. But I think the second thing that really caused that article to hit a nerve was the title and the focus, Choose Her Every Day or Leave Her. In fact, the first sentence says something to the effect of, I spent 5 years hurting a good woman by staying with her, but never fully choosing her. I think to men, that was a very confronting reality that a lot of men were living. A lot of men approach relationship like the fantasy is so much better than the reality. And so we get into the realities of relationship and we feel burdened by it, irritated by it, overwhelmed by it, by the realities of relationship with a human person, right? Versus the fantasies of relationship that we sing about in our pop songs and write in our popular music. And I'm sorry, I already said that, but we write about in our movie scripts, right? In our fairy tales, right? The fairy tale always ends with the hero marrying the princess and then the sunset goes down. But what does he do with the princess once he's married to her? Our fairy tales don't teach us that. Right. So I think a lot of men that were very confronted, even many women too, were confronted by the fact that they were staying in a relationship that they weren't fully choosing. But on the flip side of that, I think a lot of women in particular, some men as well, it validated an experience that they were having where they were with a partner who maybe with their mouth said that they were in, and even their body was in, but emotionally, maybe mentally, they're gone. They're actually not in, or at best they're half in, half out. So I think that, I think I kind of struck gold with just the title, Choose Her Every Day or Leave Her, right? Good title can certainly make or break an article. And then it was a short, 700 word. It just, I don't know, Sandy, it hit a nerve. I think those are the reasons why.
Yeah. Well, those are good reasons. As you're talking and as I read the book, it struck a chord with me as well, because I was in a 23-year marriage that I didn't feel my husband was really paying attention to me. And one of the catalysts for leaving finally was meeting a man who, tuned into me. And it was scary because suddenly I woke up and I realized what I was missing out on. And it wasn't him. He was married and he was not a very good person, but it was enough to wake me out of this kind of living a life that was so dead inside. And we tried many times to make it work, but there was just no way for us to connect in this way. And I don't think that having the knowledge would have changed anything, but for some people, we take it for granted that this person's in our space, in our lives, and we don't really nurture the relationship. We don't know what real relationships are based on. And speaking to that, you talk about the three stages of love, three stages of relationship, and I think that that will help people understand a little bit about what we're talking about here. Can you tell us what those are?
Yeah. So the three stages of relationship, it's a pretty universal model of relationship. Different teachers and experts and might use different language here and there. But essentially what we're talking about is the first stage of relationship is codependence. You know, people treat this word codependence like it's a pathology, like it's something we need to get rid of. And actually the way that I envision codependency, it's really just an extension of our childhood. I mean, when we're born as babies, we are literally dependent on another human being to keep us alive. If they don't feed us, touch us, love us, show up for us in some meaningful way, we literally die, right? And so, you know, through our very young years, we form this sort of codependency, like my survival depends on this other person doing certain things, right? So it's such a natural first stage of just human existence. But what for many of us fails to happen is we fail as adults. We don't do the work of the second stage, which is that independence work. That's the second stage would be the independence stage. That's where we start to really learn, who am I? Really independent of someone else's definitions of me or expectations of me, right? When I'm young, when I'm a child, I know what my parents expect on some level, whether it's spoken or unspoken. I know how to survive in this family system. I may have to warp myself in all kinds of ways, right? The adaptive child has to, for example, stay quiet lest I piss off dad and he hits me, right? Or I have to perform in a certain way to get mom's love, etc., right? And we take that into our adulthood and we into our adult relationships. And this becomes what we call codependence in our adult relationships, which is I have to perform a certain way or not do certain things, etc., to get love from this person, to get belonging with them. So again, it's very, very normal and unavoidable stage of human existence is this codependent way of relating to another person. But stage two, which is the work of real adolescence and adulthood, is again, as I said, figuring out, who am I? What do I stand for? What matters to me, right? What are my boundaries? What do I really care about? You know, what are my values, etc.? What are my needs in relationship? That is the work of independence. And a lot of couples in my work, what a lot of couples are really struggling with is that navigating firmly into that independent way of being in relationship so that I get to be my own person and still be with another person, right? I don't have to conform or do this weird dance or shape myself in ways that are not true to me, et cetera, et cetera, just so I can be with that person or just so they can be happy with me. So a lot of couples are doing that dance of, you know, between codependence and independence, kind of, you know, slamming back and forth between those two stages regularly. And that's important work. It's incredibly important work. But the third stage is where everyone wants to live. You know, the third stage, we'll call that the interdependence. Interdependence. That's where we've done the work of differentiation. Okay, I know who I am. I know how to speak to my desires in a way that's not disempowering of somebody else, right? So I get to be in the room. They also get to be in the room. You see, in codependence, only one person kind of, it's the power struggle, right? Either I'm in control or you're in control, but it's a constant, endless, and often excruciating power struggle. That's codependence. in second stage independence, now we're learning to kind of share power, right? We're negotiating. Both of us get to be in the room, right? We both get to have needs and desires and boundaries, and now we're navigating and negotiating how to, can we cohabitate with our differing needs, etc. Now in interdependence, ooh, that's the kind of magic stage where now we come back to this dance of surrender and communion and allowing ourselves to need each other again, but not from a place of neediness, but from a place of just, I know what I need. It's a, you know, the third stage is this really beautiful dance that's also quite terrifying at times. See, I'll language it like this. In there's a slogan, a motto in each of these stages. In stage one, the slogan is, I need you to be a certain way, say certain things, do certain things. I need that for me to be okay. Right? That's the neediness we talk about in codependence. The unhealthy neediness, we could say. In second stage, well, we realize that neediness is ruinous. And so we plant our flagpole in the ground and say, I don't need anyone. I don't need you to be a certain way, X, Y, Z. I got me and you got you, right? I'll take care of my needs. You take care of yours. Again, that's an important stage to step through, but it's not the end of the story. And a lot of couples, especially in our culture, we're so hyper individualistic in our culture that we tend to hold that up as the ideal. You know, every man for himself, every person an island, we shouldn't need anybody. Well, the third stage says, I can allow myself to need you now, right? I allow myself to need your care, to need your kindness, to need your, right? And I can allow myself to be needed by you as well. So it's like that word need comes back into play, but it's not from that codependent, oh, I'm going to die if you don't give me what I want or need, but rather I will thrive by getting my needs met. And you don't have to do it, but we're in a dance now of showing up for each other, for the relationship in a way where we both get to thrive.
Yeah, interdependence is where it's at. And I think that a lot of people don't really understand it. So I appreciate your thorough explanation of all these three stages. I think that many, many people get stuck in stage two, especially today, because for a lot of people, they're coming from complete dependency on another. Yeah. And for them to finally say, I know who I am and I don't need anybody. Mm. And I've heard this so often. I think there was actually a beautiful essay once in the Good Men Project about the three magic words that a man can say to a woman,
and the sexiest three words.
Yeah, like I got
that was
this.
That was my yours? Article. That was
okay, that might have been why I reached out to you.
Yeah.
But I think that a lot of women will tell men, "I got this."
Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Amazon Music Unlimited. You can listen to over 70 million songs and thousands of playlists and stations. Plus, you can now stream your favorite podcasts, like Last First Date Radio. You can listen to any song, anytime, anywhere, on any of your devices. Get Amazon Music Unlimited for free for 30 days. Just head on over to getamazonmusic.com/lastfirstdate to learn more and claim this offer.
I tell women all the time to allow a man to do things for you, allow them to be kind to you. And people get really threatened by that.
Yeah.
Which actually brings me to another topic that you wrote about, which is who pays on a first date. And I recently did a video on this, got a lot of pushback from people because people in the younger generations are saying, well, we should split everything from the beginning. And I have a 29-year-old daughter, and I see that generation struggling a lot because there's a lot of undefined
situationships. I can't even say the word. Yeah. Situationships. That's what it is.
Yeah. Nobody wants to define anything. In fact, my daughter went on a date last night, and she said the guy asked her, what she's looking for. And she was shocked. I've been telling her to do this for years. And she's like, no, it's too early to say at the beginning, like what we're looking for. And she was so taken by this guy. She's like, oh my God, he's a unicorn. He actually asked me what I was looking for. And I said, well, why do you think you were so taken by that? You know, it's because he had standards. And he wasn't afraid to say, I'm looking for this. And if, you know, if you're not that, then I'm going to keep looking.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that we all secretly love somebody who's clear, who knows who they are and knows what they want. Yeah. So let's go back to who pays.
Yeah.
What's your take on that?
Who pays for dinner on the first date? Oh, goodness. What a loaded question that is. And yes, I do write about that. There's a whole chapter in my book about that. And, you know, my approach to that question is, well, it kind of depends on where you're coming from, what stage you're in your life. I don't think there's a black and white answer to that. You know, Matthew Hussey had this really clever, cute answer a long time ago. I'll try to paraphrase that I think is a good answer, but I still think it's incomplete. And he said something to the effect of, if a man doesn't offer to pay, then he wasn't raised right. Or if he doesn't step up to pay, then he wasn't raised right. But if a woman doesn't offer to pay, at least pay her half or her share, then she also wasn't raised right. So I think what he's saying is that, you know, everyone should be willing to step up and give their gift at a dinner. And here's what I have to say about that. I think, you know, I went through quite a renaissance or a transformation in my 30s, because when I was very much stuck in that stage two mindset of independence, I got me and you got you. If I went on a date with a woman, I would usually pay, but I would always judge her based on whether she offered to pay for even half, right? If she didn't offer to split, that in my mind was a red flag at the time, because I was very much in that second stage mindset, like, oh man, she's going to expect me to just take care of her. I don't want to be, you know, needed in that way. That kind of sucks. You know, I grew up with strong, independent women. My mothers were really the ones who took care of, who kept the world together. And I had that expectation of the women I was dating. And so, you know, for me at that time, a good partner for me was someone who was able, capable, willing, desiring to pay her part. That changed in my late 30s when I started really asking myself, what do I want out of a relationship? And by the way, what do women really want out of me? You know, I never asked those questions in my 20s. And I think that's, you know, what you're talking about, this lack of relational kind of awareness or not wanting to define things. I think this is a product of people using what I call the wing it method of relationship. They're just winging it, just making it up as they go, because they just don't know how to do it any different, right? So just winging it. But when we start asking the questions, getting clear, I love that man asked that question on the first day, like, what are you looking for? I think when we start asking those questions, and it's okay for a time to not be clear. That's not a bad thing at all. I think that's appropriate. We should be living in the mystery of what do I really want? That should be a question for some time. I don't think you're just supposed to have immediate clarity, right, when you're 22. But eventually, you know, you sit in that question long enough and you start to get clear. Well, I started to get clear on what kind of relationship I wanted with a woman. And the kind of relationship I wanted with a woman was one where, you know, she was able to receive the gifts that I wanted to offer and a woman who wanted to give the gifts that she wanted to offer. And what I mean by that is, for example, as a man, I noticed it felt really good for me to be able to just pay on a date, whether or not I was actually interested in this woman or not. It felt empowering. It felt enlivening for me to pay for a woman on a date. You know, I could usually tell Sandra, I'd go on a date and honestly, within 60 seconds, I kind of know whether I'm going to want a second date with that person. I'm still paying for that date, whether it's coffee or dinner. I'm paying not because I think it's my obligation. That's stage one mindset. I have to do it because I'm a man, right? That doesn't excite me at all. But rather that third stage mindset is, I'm going to offer this because I can, and it feels enlivening to me to do it. Now, some women wouldn't want that, because some women feel, if I pay for the full date, they're going to feel obligated in some way, right? So if she pushes back and really wants to pay her half, oh, I'll totally let her do it. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that, right? But that's in honor of her feeling safe, feeling nourished in that interaction. So you see, it's just not anyone who makes this a black and white answer, I think, is ignoring the complexity, or ignorant of the complexity of human relational dynamics.
Yeah,
I could keep talking about this, but I'll just stop there for now.
Yeah, no, I love that you don't have rules, and that relationships are not black and white. And we do have to assess, where are we coming from and what do we want? And I think when you don't look at your unconscious biases, or how society has influenced you, like so many women who join my Facebook group will say, men have to pursue me, and I can never make the first move, and all of these old ways of thinking that you've got to ask yourself, like, is this working for me? You know, I always encourage women to make the first move in online dating, for example, because otherwise you're just passively waiting to see what falls in your net. And it's usually not what you want.
Hey, and Sandra, on that note, I just want to share, my wife really made the first move with me online. We call it, she dropped a digital handkerchief. You know, she reached out, did a friend request, and then I picked it up. And I waffled for a few months because we didn't have a chance to meet in person. And she dropped another handkerchief, right, after a few missed connections. And then finally, you know, I figured out how to meet her for a coffee date. And honestly, I thought, you know, I'd be in and out of there for an hour. I just, you know, I'm dating a lot, I'd met a lot of women, and just wasn't really inspired to go deeper with anyone. I just figured, you know, this is just going to be another coffee date. Well, you know, 5 hours into the date, we're still hanging out, and, you know, 8.5 years later, we're married. So there's something to be said for that again, you know, anyway, so I just wanted to emphasize that.
Yeah. All right, let's switch topics here, because we could definitely talk about that one for another 5 hours, but we don't have that kind of time. You also say in the book that it's men's fault that women feel unsafe. And that really struck me, because I remember, like, really the whole concept of safety and how important it is for women. It's something I actually talk to women about when we're coming up with the must-have list. I say to them, how do you want to feel when you're with a man? And they'll usually say safe. And I'll say, well, like, if you were emotionally safe with a man, who would he have to be? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the problem often is that women don't feel safe in certain ways, emotionally, physically, financially, in some way. So what can men do to help make women feel safer?
Great question. One of the challenges in this for many men is, we're taught young that our prime directive is to not hurt women. And a lot of men take that and turn it into the nice guy syndrome, where we don't speak to our desires, we don't speak to our needs, we bend ourselves, shape ourselves in all these ways, thinking that that will not cause her to feel hurt in some way, right? That will not offend. We don't want to offend her. We don't want to hurt her. We don't want to make her feel uncomfortable, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the tragic irony of that is that that nice guy syndrome, in a way, often just makes women feel unsafe, right? Because they can't trust us in a way that is counterintuitive to men. We think we're making ourselves trustworthy by proving over and over and over, I'm not a danger to you. But in that lack of being our true selves, of speaking to our desires, of owning our boundaries, of, you know, the way I describe it is, is that, like, when a woman can put her hand right through a man because he won't speak to his boundaries, he won't speak to his real desires, he won't share what's really going on with him. You know, vulnerability is a superpower, as we talked about earlier. although we didn't flesh that out, but when a man isn't really letting her into what's really going on for him, it's like she can put her arm straight through him, no backbone. Well, she can't trust that. She can't trust that what he's saying is true. She can't trust that he's gonna stay. If he won't stand up to her, he won't stand up to anybody, right? So he can't protect her. Look, that's the one extreme. The other extreme, of course, is the man that will say everything that he wants to say, will speak his desires, what he wants, will shame her, blame her when she doesn't meet his desires, right? This the on the archetypal spectrum, it's the tyrant versus the impotent weakling. You know, the impotent weakling is the one who doesn't speak up. The tyrant is the one who speaks up to his heart's content, regardless of the impact on her, right? And there's both of those extremes. And both of those men, they need to learn different skills in order to help women feel safe. You know, the nice guy needs to actually communicate his desires more. He needs to be a stand for boundaries. He needs to learn how to say when something is bothering him, that it's bothering him in a skillful way, right? He doesn't need to become the tyrant, but he does need to grow a backbone. Whereas the tyrant needs to learn how to soften his approach, to not be harsh, to give her the freedom to say no to him, for example. Right? The nice guy assumes she's going to say no to him, so he never asks. He never speaks up. He's got to learn to speak up. Whereas the tyrant, she's not allowed to say no to him, so he just makes demands over and over and over. Well, he's got to learn that she has every right to say no, and he's got to start learning how to welcome her no. All right, so that's just, you know, for starters, you know, and those two different kinds of men, how what they can do to help a woman feel safe with them.
Yeah, no, that's really important. And I like that you covered both ends of the spectrum. I've definitely met my share of men who not only didn't assert themselves or speak up about what they wanted. I've actually worked with men like this who started out dating. One of them was widowed, and he was just so happy to meet women that he would just agree with everything. They weren't finding chemistry with him. Yeah. And I said, you're missing this piece of, you need to push back sometimes. You need to say, this is my preference. Let's talk about that. Yeah. Let's negotiate our differences.
Yeah.
And one of the men that I'm working with recently had this with the woman he's been with for quite a while, and they were going to get married, and they were planning a day together. And she said, you plan the day. And he, of course, planned something that she didn't like. And she basically was testing him. And so he's like, how about we do this? And she's like, no, I don't like that. I want to do this. And so they ended up doing what she wanted, but he wasn't happy. And so the whole time he's kind of trying to sneak in what he wanted. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm encouraging him is to say from the beginning, I'm happy to do what you want for part of the day. Mm-hmm. And then I'd like to do what I want. Can we talk about that?
Yeah.
And she actually would love that. Mm. But he has such a hard time with this. Mm. And so I've experienced it with men I dated. I had a guy once brought me like a gift on a first date that was so outrageous. It was like, it was personal. It was expensive. I had never met the guy before. I was like, this is way over the top. It made me so uncomfortable. And he had traveled like an hour and a half to see me. And then he was just all about giving without me having to do anything. And that was just the wrong balance. And I told him, I said, don't respect you when you do this. So it's such an interesting thing that happens inside us. But I think, you know, what you described is important, because also this whole nice guys finish last BS, it drives me crazy, because women want a nice man, a good man who's kind, but not a pushover.
Absolutely. I will never teach a man how to not be kind to his partner, how to not be honoring of her in all the ways. Like that doesn't serve whatsoever. You know, I see this like the work for us men is to fuse the nice guy and the tyrant into a healthy adult that can, that knows when to just get out of the way and let the woman lead, let her tell you what it is that she wants, and then, and go for it, enjoy that, embrace it. And though we also need to retain that strong energy that says, you know what, too far. This is too far. This is, we're going into territory where I'm just going to get angry and resentful and break down. So let's pull back, right? We need both of those energies, the nice guy and the tyrant energy, again, held by a healthy adult, the healthy adult within, so that we can show up fully in our relationships, be great companions. As you said, you know, be a nice guy, but not a pushover.
Yeah. All right. I want to talk about when a man checks out of a relationship.
Mm.
We see this quite often where somebody's checked out and a woman really wants to get him to come back, but she doesn't want to become chameleon just to kind of manipulate or lose herself in the process. What's your advice for that?
Yeah. So I call it masculine checkout syndrome, MCS. When a man stays physically but is checked out emotionally or mentally, and obviously women can check out too. It's not unique to men, but one of the things that I'm always cautious about is that language. How do I get him to check back in? How do I get him to show up? You know, my initial answer to that is, or response to that is, you can't get a man to do anything he doesn't want to do, and if you can, then he won't respect himself, and also you won't respect him either. All right, so there's the conundrum, because I understand what's being wanted. It's like, okay, we're in relationship. How do I bring him back into relationship with me to actually being relational? I think that's really what the question underneath. How do I get him to come back? It's like, how do I bring him back into relationship with me? And I think there's a distinction that I make between feedback and criticism that I think can be helpful here, because the distinction is this: criticism, I call criticism direction given that is not being asked for. Direction given that is not being asked for. That could look like, I notice you don't really seem to be here with me. You should really be paying more attention to me. You know, if you really cared about me, you would do X, Y, Z, etc. Things like this. That's criticism. You're giving direction that is not being asked for, right? And that's soft criticism. It may not sound like criticism, but as a man, that's exactly what it is. You're telling me what to do to fix things, to make things better. And even if you're right, you know, that part of me that wants to be a sovereign, free man is going to rebel on some level. Now, maybe I can get past that. And one of the things I do teach men and work with myself is to get what I call underneath the level of the complaint. But that's incredibly difficult for most men, myself included. You know, if my wife gives me any direction that I'm not asking her for, my initial response is, back the F off, please. Okay, that's criticism. Feedback, on the other hand, this is essential, I think, for a woman to offer her partner. I mean, men too, but we're talking about when a man is checked out. Feedback is what is a vulnerable reveal of what is happening for you in their presence. You know, so feedback might sound like, you know, I'm feeling really lonely in your presence. I'm feeling disconnected from you. I miss you. I'm scared that you may be checked out and leaving the relationship. I mean, I see you're physically here, but I don't really feel your presence. Okay, that's feedback. Notice I'm not telling him what to do about it. I'm giving honest feedback about what is happening for me. You know, likewise, feedback should be positive also. I mean, it's like, you give a man feedback on both sides, both when it's uncomfortable, but also, I love that you took me out to dinner last Friday. That made me, I really felt good in my body, right? Or I love it when you look at me, when you really look at me with your eyes and look at me. Oh, I love it. It feels so good, right? And it's like, you're training him. You're telling him what it is that you need. And you're giving him an honest reveal, honest look into what is happening for you. And again, that's just kind of for starters, but I think that's essential. Men need to know what is happening for you. And the more you can do it in the frame of feedback, not criticism. A lot of men are still going to reject the feedback. They're not going to like it. They're not going to agree with it. You know, you shouldn't feel, I mean, what do you mean? I'm here. What do you mean you don't feel my presence? I'm sitting right here. Right? I get that. We men are a stubborn lot, and we are, you know, men have this idea that women are crazy. Well, I'm always saying, guys, they're only crazy because we're clueless. You know, let's own our part in why women get crazy, because we don't have a clue.
Yeah, so. It's a cycle. It's a vicious cycle. But yeah. I love the positive feedback. I mean, what it sounds like, the way you describe criticism, it's also unsolicited advice. It's,
mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, people know when they talk to me and they want to give me some advice, they have to check in first. They have to ask. Yeah. I'm usually not looking for it. And if I'm not looking for it, or you haven't gotten curious as to what's really going on for me first, then what you're sharing with me is not going to be helpful. It's actually totally missing the point. But I remember years ago, I dated a guy, I was in a relationship, and he used to send me these cute little poems every morning that he would make up. They were like dumb, fun, sweet. Mm-hmm. And we had a disagreement the night before, and he did not text me. So it's very clear when you've had a regular text and you get nothing. I sat with it and I gave him that positive feedback. I miss your morning text. Is everything okay? And then he started going into how he felt. And I said, this is something that we should not be talking about on text. Let's get on a call tonight. Yeah. So knowing how to like take what's going on and create a more emotionally better communication, more emotionally connective experience makes all the difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. So Brian, I have a million more questions, but we are running out of time. So I'm going to ask you my final question, which is, what are your final words of advice for anyone who wants to go on their last first date?
Well, Sandy, first, just thank you for this conversation. For someone who wants to go on their last first date, well, I think we touched on a few things earlier. One, be clear about what you want, and be willing to speak it at the beginning. Right up front. I think, you know, when I met my wife, I was so clear that I wanted to be in a relationship. I was clear. In fact, I'm the one that told her before we even met I think in the first 10 minutes that we started chatting, I told her I'm ready to share my life with somebody. Right? I've said those words, and she was too. Again, it took us a few months to actually meet, and I didn't know that she was the one I was going to do that with, but I was so clear.
Yeah.
Not only is there no shame in doing that, I think it is healthy and appropriate if you are clear. And it's okay if you're not clear. You could say that too, right? But I think that's really important. Be clear in your vision, be willing to communicate it, and be willing for the person you're sitting across from to not share that vision. Right. But what a great way to filter out who is not for you. And likewise, be willing to speak to your boundaries, to give feedback early. You know, my wife did the same thing early in our relationship. I think within just a month of dating each other, she gave me some feedback. I was working across the country. I was in New York and she was in LA for a couple of weeks. And I remember during that time, I would only text her or call her in the evening, you know, cause I didn't want to wake her up at 6 a.m. in the morning when I'm starting to go into work. Well, after a few days of that, she said, you know, it doesn't feel good to me that I don't hear from you until the end of the day. And I start to wonder, is everything okay? And what's going on? She said, you made a request. Would you please contact me in the morning as well? And I said, yep. I'll do it. Look, Sandy, I wasn't thrilled about it. I didn't really want to do that, you know, at this stage, but not a big sacrifice, right? And so I did it. And that's just been our whole relationship, really, you know, the both of us communicating our feedback, what's working for us, what isn't, and then us finding our way together. And that that starts, I think that can and should, if you can bring yourself to it, start that as soon as possible. Don't wait till you're 5 years in and then start giving honest feedback.
So agree with you. There are so many people do the bait and switch, and it's like, right, where were you for all that time? Right. And who were exactly. you? Because yeah. I think that if two people are willing and able to be honest and open and communicate well, then trust is built quickly. I mean, we know who this person is. And to me, there's nothing sexier than a person who knows themselves, who can express themselves, who can accept feedback, who can give feedback. You want to have that give and take, that push and pull. Otherwise, it's just not worth doing. And
absolutely.
Yeah, great advice and wonderful conversation. So, Brian, I know you have a free gift for our audience. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so I've created 7 short videos that simply help you better understand yourself and your partner. They're videos that deal with jealousy and navigating conflict. I mean, that's really the core of my work is helping couples, helping men get connected to themselves and connected to their partners, helping also, you know, through my book, Choose Her Every Day or Leave Her, helping women feel really validated and also get clarity about the struggles of men, but also what women can do to create more connection, to help bring men back into connection with them, men who are willing and who want that. If a man doesn't want it, ain't nothing you can do, but let him go. Let him go. So it's just 7 free videos. That's my free offering to your audience, those 7 free videos. Should I say the link, or you'll put the link, or
you can say the link.
It's brianreeves.com, and I spell my name with a Y, Bryan Reeves, REEVES.com/ what is it? 7 videos.
Seven videos.
Yeah. Brianreeves.com/7 videos. And certainly would love to invite everyone to check out my book as well. Choose Her Every Day or Leave Her. It's available audiobook, Amazon, you know, all the places.
Awesome. And all the links for your Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, everywhere you are, that is where we will send people. And there'll be a link to the book directly as well. And thank you, Brian. It was great reconnecting and
likewise,
seeing how you've evolved. And I loved our conversation today.
Thank you so much, Sandy. Likewise. Again, congratulations, getting your books out yourself and just continuing to do this good work.
Thank you. And thanks everybody for listening today. If you love our show, please share it with your friends. Give us a high rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And as always, here's to your last first date.
If you are ready to get unstuck, gain new tools, become more empowered, and finally find your last first date, I'd love to talk to you. Fill out an application to be considered for a complimentary half-hour love breakthrough session at lastfirstdate.com/application.